The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in as students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Gray Oldenburger, Nathan Gladwell. There is an overtime-filled Week 7 of college football, guys. We're going to go through that. I know Auburn had a bye, Gray. Ended up losing to the bye week, 42-14. Yep. I know you're really struggling there. Rough week for the Auburn Tigers. Hopefully, y'all bounce back next week.
Thorn threw his fifth interception. Yeah,
Thorn threw five interceptions against bye week. You had Darquez Hunter struggle. I mean, y'all can buy points. So I'm sorry, Auburn ended up losing their grade. It's an unfortunate thing. No bowl for y'all. Nathan, let's move on from the disappointment of Auburn and move on to, I guess you could consider a disappointment in Alabama, but they are only have one loss. They're in the top 10, but I think a lot of Alabama fans consider this season thus far a disappointment. But they rebound from the Vanderbilt loss, take on South Carolina and Bryant Denny, win 27-25. But it felt like Alabama would try to give South Carolina every chance to win this game. And South Carolina was like, no, we don't feel like it today. But we touched on it last week. We brought up how we would find all we need to know about Alabama and how they responded to that Vanderbilt loss. So what did you find out about Alabama in this win against South Carolina? Granted, it was a tough one.
Well, I've had a little over 24 hours to kind of let this marinate and really just get a grasp of what happened this weekend. Because I think it's easy to go ahead and overreact to say, oh, you only won by two at home. You played sloppy. You didn't play good. I mean, you probably should have lost the game. And while all those things are true, you break it down into a little bit more of a detailed result, and you look at where Alabama did improve. I know it's not going to show it in the final score, but you watch film, you can see things that were done better, especially on the defensive end. I think that was a huge thing. The third down conversion rate, I think South Carolina was 7 of 15 on third downs, if I'm not mistaken. Or some close to there. The biggest thing there, South Carolina was able to put together, I think it was the beginning of the third quarter, they were able to put together a drive where they converted on like five third downs. That cannot happen. That is the main thing that I was mainly concerned with. Alabama found ways to get off the field earlier on in this game. It was 14-0. Alabama had all the momentum. And you do stupid stuff. I mean, you can go to the drive before, let's say South Carolina had the ball last, fourth and nine, they get a touchdown off it. I mean, you only rush three. I didn't agree with that. I always love bringing pressure, especially third, fourth down. You bring pressure. You put the quarterback in Lenore Sellers in a tough scenario to make a play rather than just letting him have all the time in the world, which he did. And like it or not, these cornerbacks and defensive backs are still pretty inexperienced, and they gave up a touchdown. And that's a huge momentum shifter. Alabama then gets the ball back. Joe Morrow, he tried to make a play, and I believe he ended up getting a safety off of Tindall Running in the end zone.
Yep.
And that's something he has to be more aware of. I think it's just another thing that happens in the moment. You can't really blame the dude, but then again, you're the leader of the team. You're the veteran quarterback. You had to be able to make a play and not have that happen. Anyway, South Carolina gets the ball back. They don't do anything with it. You get the ball back. I believe there's around a minute or so left before the half. Alabama tries to make things happen. It ends up being third down, I believe, with about 10 seconds. We call a timeout. Don't know why. Should have just went to half. Joe Morrow throws a bad pick. They return it within field goal distance, 1 second on the clock. They kick a field goal. And when it's 14-0, and then you suddenly look up at halftime, and it's 14-12, and they get the ball to start the second half. All the momentum you had, the momentum that could probably have built a blowout lead, It's gone. And that comes down to coaching. That's decision-making where we tried to force something when we shouldn't have. I think after the safety, I probably just wanted to go to half, and we made it worse. We tried to do stuff, and we made it worse. That's a big thing. And that's on Kalen DeBoer. That's on Nick Sheridan for trying to force stuff on the offensive end. Defense has to do a better job of not giving up conversions on third and fourth down. I feel like a broken record. I say this every week, especially last week, but I felt like we did a better job in that sense, especially in the second half. you know, if you ignore the opening drive South Carolina had to take the lead 19-14 to open the second half, they struggled. They struggled on the offensive end. The defense did a really good job. I was impressed with Quay Robinson and Quay Rousseau. Both of them, they did a fantastic job off the edge. Defensive line, I felt like they struggled. They got they got bullied, frankly. Linebackers just wanted to meet Rocket Sanders, a fantastic running back, in the gap rather than going and attacking. I think that's a big thing. You want to go downhill, you want to attack. And the cornerbacks, I didn't feel like they got picked apart a lot, but when you're also playing 5 yards off and you're in cover one the entire time, it puts them in a bad scenario. So that's why I'm Kane Womack for continuously putting them in that spot. I didn't like that. I want the play calling to change on that end. It's frustrating to see every single third down where you're having your cornerbacks 5 yards off the receiver and they just run an easy slant and pick a first down. That's what happened last week. Diego Pavia saw that. He picked us apart with that. Lawrence Seller saw that this week. He picked us apart with that. So it has to change in that sense. I will say it showed a lot of adversity to be able to go down and retake the lead. It would be easy just to sulk in it and just completely disappear in those scenarios. South Carolina is a very good team. They've had games where they probably should have won. LSU comes to mind. They probably should have won that game. They handled Kentucky really well. There's just some things that come to mind. So it's we look at these games like Vanderbilt. Of course, you want to say that's a terrible loss. Vanderbilt's a good team. They went and beat Kentucky this weekend. They're a very good team. They lost to Georgia Southern. That's a fact. But Vanderbilt is a good team. South Carolina is a good team. So this isn't just the SEC where you can sleepwalk through and say all these teams are absolutely terrible. It's not like that anymore, especially in the modern day of college football, where all these guys are going through the transfer portal and these schools definitely have money. They can figure out how to do stuff with it. So, in the moment, I don't think I was happy with a win. But at the end of the day, a win is a win. I know Alabama fans aren't used to saying that. Year that comes to mind, 2014, Alabama lost to Ole Miss at home, and we go play Arkansas. We only win 14-13 in that game. Nick Saban had a lot to say after. He was extremely happy that, you know, the players are happy that they won. And I think it's more about being grateful of getting the win rather than looking on the downside and saying, we only won by two, or this could have happened if this happened, and talking about hypotheticals. Like, that's not where we should be as a fan base. We should be happy that we are sitting at 5-1 going into Tennessee week. And of course that has a lot of implications, but things did improve this week. If you ask me after the game, I'd say that game was worse than the Vanderbilt game, but I'm breaking down film and watching what happened. It was better. It just, some plays didn't get to plan, and we committed a lot more turnovers. That would be the main thing.
Nathan, before I move on to other college football games, and I know you kind of recapped a lot there with Alabama, a lot of fans and a lot of people around the country, even analysts, are criticizing Nick Sheridan's play calling when it comes to being less run oriented. And you look at the stats, Jay Miller only 12 carries, Justice Haynes only 8. And coming into the season, everybody was hyping this group up as being one of the best in the country, if not the best, alongside Ohio State and Penn State. And it's felt like this entire season, Nick Sheridan has either abandoned the run game, ignored it. I mean, it just feels like he doesn't care a lot about it outside of the QB run and the pull play he uses with Tyler Booker. Why is Nick Sheridan consistently ignoring this running attack when he has two of the most talented running backs in the country in the backfield?
I think it's his play style, his play calling style to want to call more pass plays. You look at the amount of RPOs we run, wide receiver screens, that has been high on the list. And then you've got a guy in Jalen Milroe who basically is a running back who you constantly put on quarterback lead dives and powers and stuff like that. But I don't think you want to ignore a guy in. I am so high on Jay Miller. I mean, he's one of the best running backs in the SEC in my mind. What he does with the ball, the amount of anger he runs with, I think is a big thing. And Justice Haynes takes he deserves a lot of credit for what he does with the amount of carries he gets. So both of his running backs, I think, given more carries, could do more with the ball. I think you go back to week one against Western Kentucky. Both those guys touched the ball a great amount, and they were able to have multiple touchdowns, and they had long runs. And I think that was also good for the pass game because that was open up. You had guys playing down the box. Guess what? You got a guy in Ryan Williams who can burn people over the top. Jeremy Bernard had a fantastic game this weekend. He is definitely capable of it. I know Kerry Prentice was out, but he will be back eventually. He's capable of that, and so is Kendrick Law. So you have wide receivers on the roster who will benefit from a better run game. I go back to the Wisconsin game too. I mean, we were able to run the ball effectively. I thought the offensive line did a fantastic job of run blocking. I want to go back to that. I don't know why we strayed away from that. I think you look at the Vanderbilt game. That's probably the biggest thing that happened, where you get down early and you feel like you had to just immediately throw the ball and you abandon the run game. That's what happened. And in this game, you had opportunities to establish a run game, but we chose to run the quarterback more. And that's just something that probably was affected after Vanderbilt week. But hopefully against a defense in Tennessee who has kind of struggled against the run as of late, I think this would be a great week to take advantage of running those two guys more, and getting just I look at the offensive line. The reason they're struggling so much right now is because they're having to constantly, like, the defense knows what's going on. The defense knows we're about to go back and pass. So you're putting the tackles in a crappy situation. I know it'd be so easy to yell at Keen Proctor this week for the lack of effort this week, but every single snap, when you know you have a guy lined up against you who's faster than you, and you're having to beat him to a certain spot, that's difficult. I mean, you look at how big Keen Proctor is. So it's not on him. It's on the play calling. You have to be way more balanced if you want to succeed in this conference. I think you've seen that every single year, going back 2008. I mean, you can go all the way back there. You have to be balanced if you want to win this conference. You can't just be an air raid. Didn't work for Mike Leach and Mississippi State. And you can't be one-dimensional like LSU teams have been in the past when they just ran Leonard Fournette into the ground and they couldn't pass. So you got to have a balance.
Yeah, but a win is a win, Nathan. Alabama ended up winning this game. I mean, you can't be mad at them for winning a game, but you need to show a little bit more improvement week after week. And I think after the Vanderbilt loss, like you said, Nathan, they did show, even if it was a little improvement, they did show it. So there's a bright spot at least. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the other games around the country. Texas destroyed Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry, 34-3. Game was never close. I mean, Oklahoma has no offense. If Oklahoma had an offense, they would probably be a top five team in the country because their defense is that good. But no offense for Oklahoma really hinders them from being any decent in the SEC. Number five, Georgia withstood a comeback from Mississippi State to win 41-31. Carson Beck had to play like Superman for them to even escape Mississippi State. He had Kirby Smart tackling the Mississippi State quarterback to help him win. I mean, Georgia is kind of like Alabama in a sense where people are over-hyping them or did before the season started, and they're really showing, not just them, Georgia and Alabama, but the whole entire country is showing that the talent is much more dispersed now. And this game is just one of the many examples. At number 16, Utah lost to Arizona State 27-19. And then to top it all off, our favorite quarterback, Cam Rising, is out for what looks like the year with the lower leg injury, and he is eligible for medical redshirt to return next season if he chooses to do so.
Fries
in the bag. At number four, Penn State avoided an upset from USC, 33-30 in overtime. The Penn State tight end, Tyler Warren, if you have not seen the clips and everything on social media, recommend going to watch that. Dude was all over the place. The best tight end in the country, I think, so far. I don't think there's anybody close. Like I said, I definitely recommend going to watch those clips of him, and especially the play where he was the center and then caught the touchdown pass.
Yeah, that catch was amazing. Crazy.
At number 23, Illinois also avoided an upset by Purdue, 50-49 in overtime. Purdue almost got their signature win. They usually get every season upsetting a ranked team, but they fall short. Great. Eric Collins was on this call. I'm not sure if you heard it, the Hornets announcer, but he did an amazing job. Hopefully he does more nationally televised games like that.
He's so good at football. He's so good at football. He's great at basketball, but man, we get him on a football field. The electricity coming out of his voice is just next level.
Number 14, BYU dominated Arizona 41-19. Not sure what's going on with the Wildcats. I think me and Nathan both have predicted them at the start of the season to at least contend for the college football playoff, but they are not even close. 3-3. And I know it's only three losses, but what they have coming up, this team, there's no hope in the Big 12 with three losses. Colorado's comeback falls short against Kansas State, lose 31-28. I'm fairly certain we're all pretty glad Colorado loses. Well, we're kind of tired of all that jazz with the Buffaloes.
Is Shiloh Sanders still on the ground right now?
He might be. He broke both his legs that play.
Number 8 Tennessee, their defense stepped up in overtime to escape Florida 23-17. Graham Mertz is out for the season for Florida, so Billy Napier has his job on the line and is starting a true freshman quarterback in DJ Lagway. Granted, Lagway was, I believe, the number one overall quarterback recruit, so it's not like he's put some scrub out there, but not ideal for Billy Napier. LSU upset Ole Miss 29-26 in overtime. I think Damian Harris's quote from a couple weeks ago we talked about really rings true here. Lane Kiffin's a front runner. They can't win in close games, and they didn't win a close game here, and they haven't yet. Jackson Dart looked like Anakin Skywalker in the post game, had all that happen. I mean, Ole Miss, there's still an outside look for them, but it's getting tougher and tougher with the no signature win they have on their record right now. I mean, what's the biggest win they got?
Yeah, no wins. I mean, what?
Furman? Not to beat Georgia in a couple of weeks to have any shot or any say. Well, I mean, they've got to win out anyway, but to have that fighting chance and to want to be in Atlanta, you got to win out and hope things fall in your lap, which I don't know. I don't think so.
Number 2, Ohio State fell to number 3, Oregon, 32-31 after Ohio State's quarterback, Will Howard, decided to do his best Dak Prescott impression and scrambled on the final play and slid down as zeros hit the clock. I don't get it, guys. I mean, you look at Will Howard's stats before that, and if they had won the game, we'd probably be sitting here saying how good Will Howard is. But he makes one mistake. It's kind of like Peyton Thorne a couple weeks ago with Oklahoma. He plays really good, but he makes one mistake that costs them the game. And that's all we're going to talk about. It's all the media is going to talk about. They're not going to talk about how Will Howard made this pass or made this clutch play. We're going to be sitting here talking about how Will Howard cost his team the game. And that play, while there's other chances to win that game, make a defensive stop, that's what we're going to harp on. And that's just what it is for Will Howard. And Ryan Day, 1-7 versus top 5 opponents. I mean, is it time for Ryan Day to pack his bags? Is it?
That is a very detailed question, Alex, because you look at Ryan Day, where he is. I know you get, it's easy to go off the record and say Ryan Day is a terrible coach, and he does have a tremendous amount of talent on that team. I believe that they were favorites to win the national championship this year, which is still possible. I'm not saying it isn't. It's one loss to a very, very good Oregon team on the road by 1 point. I'm not saying that they're out of that race, but it's easy to break down and say Ryan Day can't win the big games, but just imagine where Ohio State would be if they didn't have Ryan Day, if they had a different head coach.
Might be better off.
You might think, but the grass isn't always greener. It's easy to go in and abandon the coach like Ryan Day, but like, who you going to go get? What's your backup plan?
I think the Indiana coach might be a good option for him, because at least he can coach a team. I mean, Ryan Day, Ohio State's one of the places where you can have a mediocre head coach and win football games. I think Ryan Day is an example of that. Ryan Day's a mediocre head coach, in my opinion, and he wins football games. They get talent regardless of their coach. I mean, it's like Alabama. Alabama could have hired some scrub, and they're still going to get 4 stars at the very least. Yeah. It's a brand name thing, and you don't necessarily have to have Nick Saban as your head coach to get the marquee talent.
That's true. Ryan Day is not a coach that I would think he could go to not even a bad program, but a middle of the pack program and get to a bowl game. He has not shown that, at least. Ohio State's always going to have the Jimmies and the Joes. It's Ohio State. Ohio State, Alabama, Texas, and stops there.
Notre Dame, maybe they're teeter totter.
Yeah, but I don't think they're up on the level of those three. I do think Notre Dame is in that second group with the Georgias, the Clemsons, if you've got a coach that is that can speak English, you're going to get players there. But it's all about turning that into wins on the field. And Ryan Day has won games, but he hasn't won the big games. He hasn't won the games that he's got to win to remain the head coach at Ohio State. And I don't think it's necessarily time to give up on the Ryan Day project. But if you're an Ohio State fan, with the type of talent that you have on this team, you do expect to win those type of games, even though that one was a really close one on the road against a very, very good Oregon team, an Oregon team who I think does end up winning the Big Ten.
Well, I mean, they beat Ohio State. The only other team that really is in their path is Penn State, and Penn State struggled with USC. So, I mean, Oregon's got the bright road in front of them. I mean, it's a whole thing for Oregon. If they can win the games they're supposed to win, then they're in. But we've seen with Alabama, they lost a game they shouldn't have. So it's any given Saturday in college football, and it's been proven the past 2 weeks at the very least that it's any given Saturday. All right, so that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.